Well, hey, my friends, welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brewer Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. Hope you guys are having a fantastic day. Hope you guys are having had a great weekend as well. Got a lot of different stuff that we've been covering on the shows, and I hope you guys have enjoyed some of those. And if you guys need anything, you know where to get a hold of us. Team Health Masters with the Joint Rebuilding Formula on sale for product of the week. Over 14% off right now. Incredibly effective product at rebuilding soft tissue and maintaining overall joint health. So be sure to take advantage of that. And if you need anything, email us or call us 1-800-726-1834. And thank you. I've been getting a lot of emails from people that are giving me kind of information that they want us to cover. Some of it being very good. And also, too, thank you for commenting on a lot of the different platforms we have now. I've asked you guys as far as Rumble, Spotify, Gab, make sure you're going on there and you're liking us and following us on there so we can continue to keep the algorithms going. As we have found so many times now, they like to suppress a lot of stuff that we do on certain platforms. However, the ones we are on now seem to be working a lot better because we can't do much of anything on YouTube.
We try again.
We tried. Well, we did put a new YouTube together, but it's going to be just short snippets of like supplements.
We can try to put a couple of them on there. Maybe they're going to not ban us as like that for the last 8 years.
I just have to be super, super restrictive as far. And that's what it's so ironic to me when you see certain groups get on YouTube. Also, they start talking about a certain topic that's like taboo. You're not supposed to talk about it, but they get 10 million views overnight. And you wonder, why are all the algorithm, points to them?
Well, let's add a word here. Why are all the CIA algorithms pointing towards
them? There you go.
and honestly, if you think about it, if everybody who basically is Operation Mockingbird is allowed to be on YouTube and everybody else who's not is not allowed to be on Operation Mockingbird's YouTube, we can call it that now,
yeah.
Operation Mockingbird's YouTube, then why in the world do we think that we're going to get back on there again, because we are definitely not CIA payroll.
No. Well, one big thing that I saw that was actually very interesting, and so I'm glad to see this now, the CDC has been ordered to immediately stop working with the WHO. The memorandum says decision was made after Trump signed executive order indicating the United States would pull out of the Global Health Agency. They said effective immediately, according to the memorandum. The U.S. CDC official issued a memo on Sunday to senior agency leaders to stop all works with the WHO must immediately stop and await further guidance. So essentially, the executive order to extricate the United States from the WHO is being handled. They said under the mishandling of the COVID-19 pandemic that arose out of Wuhan, China, and other global crises, this is why we're pulling out of, which, by the way, the WHO is just – the WHO is one of those agencies that – this is so odd to me. We are the primary funders of the World Health Organization, the United States is, and yet we're told – we're given demands about what we have to do as our own independent country. So we give money to the WHO so the WHO can tell us what we can and can't do as far as with our health aspects. Remember, the WHO was instrumental at getting the United States and other countries to start shutting down and locking down. They were the ones that came out and said, there's a global whole health pandemic. Everybody needs to basically shut down their countries. This is what we have told everyone to do now. Again, it's another topic that needs to be addressed, and I'm glad that we're actually starting to step out of this, because the fact that we have to fund the WHO so they can tell us what to do, that's just – it's a level of irony that you can't stop laughing about.
Oh, by the way, we missed several shows last week because Austin and I caught whatever this grunge is that's going around. And let me just share something with you about the grunge. They took some other type of virus and they combined it with some other type of virus and some other type of virus. They threw some trifecta at everybody. And the stuff that had worked for me extremely well when I'd had COVID several times before – didn't do a whole lot. This was an interesting week last week, and I want to thank you for your prayers. But we were able to do it. I took a boatload of supplements, the same thing we always do, the D3, the iodine, the vitamin C, the zinc. And I also had ivermectin, and I also had a hydroxychloroquine here at the house. And I want to thank, Roxanne for helping us like she did. I want to thank Karen for helping us like she did. I want to thank Melina for helping us like she did. I mean, we've got so many people that have come in and tried to help us as far as getting through all of this stuff, including Lana. Lana was great. So thanks again for all the help that you got and all the prayers we got last week. But I want to say something about the WHO real quick, because this is a big deal, and I'm glad Austin brought this up. The World Health Organization is as corrupt as it gets.
No, absolutely.
Okay, it is so corrupt to the core that it's mind-boggling. Back in the 70s, it was instrumental in contaminating the blood supply in Africa, and into the 80s to promote AIDS, push AIDS into the African continent. You think, well, that's a pretty bold statement. Yeah, it's a pretty bold statement. It's the truth. The World Health Organization is as rotten as they get. They're all part of the whole group of people that want to reduce the population of the planet, and they're corrupt to the core. And it reminds me of that movie Atlas Shrugged, Austin, where Reardon is asked to give a donation
yes.
to this particular group of people through his son-in-law or whatever he was. And the son-in-law goes, oh, no, you can't write a check. You have to wire the money. We don't want to see your name on anything.
Yeah. We want the donation, but your name can't be on it.
Yeah, we don't want to be associated with you. And I'm like, if I'd have been him, he was nice enough to give the guy a check anyhow. But here's the thing. I'd have just put the check back in my pocket, torn it in half, put it back in my pocket. I said, tell you what, go figure out your own funding. That's what the World Health Organization is. It does what it wants to do. It's like Austin says, then it starts barking orders at us, and we're the ones paying the bulk of the bills. Now, the other thing I would do too, now this is just, I hope Trump does it. I would take that United Nations building and I would implode it. I would get out of the United Nations too. I say, you know what? I've had enough of that because we're the primary giver of the United Nations.
Yeah, well, the United Nations is another topic. This one right here. I mean, the World Health Organization, by the way, if you understand, they're not a big agency. They are a small organization that essentially rules and says whatever they do. They tell whatever other country has to do. They deem it so.
Now, notice Germany doesn't have any freedom. They're underneath the United States because of World War II still. So the United States and Germany are being forced to do this. And of course, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, you think about it, they're a country under their own.
Yeah.
Think about this for a second. They're giving as much as Germany is giving because they're pushing the agenda of eugenics. And then they got Gabby and the European Commission.
Well, look at this. You got European Commission. You got the Rotary International. You got Bill and Melinda Gates. But then the United States and Germany are stuck at the top of the list donating the primary bulk of the funds.
Well, yeah, because they're told to. Because our government's in control. That's why I love the way Elon Musk is going around shutting down agencies right now. Now, another agency that's been unbelievably involved in biological weapons research around the world and funding gain of function laboratory all over the world is USAID. Now, this is very important. Now, Elon Musk went in there and he basically took a look at it. And then they said, this thing is not a worm and an apple. It's an entire apple full of worms. It's a solid wall of apple worms. That's what I'm going to read it to you. Elon Musk and President Donald Trump shut down the embattled government agency tasked with humanitarian relief overseas after they agreed the organization was beyond repair. The billionaire's first buddy led a civilian review of federal government with Trump's go-ahead and decided to shut down the entire agency for the U.S. Agency for International Development, you said, and its Washington, D.C. offices. They were shocked when they woke Monday morning to emails instructing them to stay out of the agency's headquarters. It became apparent it is not an apple with a worm in it, Musk said of the six-decade-old U.S. International Aid and Development Agency. What we have is just a ball of worms.
That's wild.
Isn't that wild? And he's right. You got to basically get rid of the whole thing. It's beyond repair. We're shutting it down, he said in the audio-only appearance on X. Now, this is the group that comes in and brings in agencies and universities in the third world countries and work on biological gain of function. This is the kind of stuff that Fauci was involved with as far as funding through this organization. This agency, he's right, is a complete and total ball of worms.
$72 billion this agency burnt through last fiscal year. Yeah. $72 billion. They said they bring in clean water, support for AIDS, energy, and health.
No, what they do is they in Kianaman, they were actually running the biological weapons laboratory there through one of the universities here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And that's according to Dr. Francis Boyle, who wrote the Biological Weapons Treaty. And so this group of people in this organization are so corrupt and so bad that there's only one thing you can do with it, and that is just basically fire everybody and flush the entire agency, period, and reappropriate the funds that they were given if there's any money left. This is just a giant money laundering weapons, biological weapons organization that works with other corporations and agencies around the world to fund gain of function research, in my opinion. So it's just, I am so happy they're shutting this one down. I've done entire sections on shows before about this particular organization when I talked about the Biological Weapons Treaty from the 80s. So very, very important that we understand what these people are, who they are. And I'm really happy that Trump's doing this and that Elon Musk is involved in this. Maybe Elon Musk basically sees things a little bit more clearly than Trump does, maybe because of his Asperger's syndrome. I don't know. Maybe he sees things a little differently as far as how he sorts information. But I tell you what, he called this one and he nailed it, and he was right. What do you think, Ellis?
Well, when you're talking about agencies that are pushing almost $100 billion a year, you got to start asking yourself a question. At what point in time are we going to audit these agencies and figure out what they're actually spending money on? I mean, that's the thing that it's gotten so frustrating with. I think the bulk of the United States population has reached a point where we're going, what are we paying taxes for? Granted, you know, there's certain aspects of local municipalities, there's roadways, there's certain things that I can sit there and kind of justify some taxes on. Say, hey, I like driving in Florida with really smooth roads, even though everything's under constant construction because all the
I hate potholes.
Yeah, hitting a pothole 70 miles an hour in a car is not fun. So, I mean, I can kind of justify some of that. But when you start looking at stuff where this agency's getting $100 billion and Ukraine's getting another $170 billion, another $100 billion to this, you start going, what the heck are we paying for? And so, again, something to be aware of. But also, too, they said here now border crossings are down 93%.
That's incredible.
93% since Trump basically got inaugurated.
Calling the Marine Corps, things happen.
That's such a fact. They said now the U.S. military is ready to respond to Mexican drug cartels who now have been using kamikaze drones. You've seen this now.
Kamikaze drones.
They're using drones, and they're flying them over the border, basically trying to land and drop certain things on the Border Patrol agents. So they're saying now that if this continues, this is going to be taken as an act of war from the Mexican
cartel. That's what the Palestinians did to Israel, and look what happened to the Palestinians. they kind of got gauzed up, didn't they?
I don't know if the
if they even did it.
I mean, if they really wanted to go head to head with the U.S. military, the cartel is going to be I mean, there's nothing much creepier than, you know, having a low flyover from an F-18 when you're out there, you know, with some couple little rockets and AT-4s. I mean, let's be real. These guys are going to get there.
I'd rather have an F-18 than an A-10.
Yeah.
Warthog. Bring the Warthog over with her.
Yeah.
20-millimeter
just running it. Yeah. And there's also, too, there's some weird stuff that's been coming out. And one thing that I wanted to cover as far as that happened with that Blackhawk accident. You know, we didn't really cover it much last week because we ran tape a couple of the days. You've seen a lot of the stuff. You've read a lot of the articles on it. But one thing that I did want to bring up that I found was be very strange, and this isn't actually an article, and some people saw this, some people didn't already. Lockheed Martin, who basically does a lot of the contracts for Blackhawk, and actually printed the article off because I wasn't sure if it was going to go down, because this article got posted on LockheedMartin.com on the website on October 17, 2024. And it goes into detail how the U.S. Army is using Black Hawk helicopters integrated with Sikorsky Matrix autonomy system that can receive remote mission commands in real time. They carry out mission on its own using an onboard autonomous system without remote control or without pilot inputs. And I'll post this on the website if you guys want to look at it. But I printed it off because it was one of those things. I mean, it was all right on Lockheed Martin's website. Very strange. So the Matrix system is unique because it's not a simple flight director following a planned route. Instead, the system acts fully independently, reacting to a dynamic combat environment to avoid threats, optimize routing, and execute emergency procedures if necessary. And that's what was so sad as far as, I mean, my condolences to everybody. I mean, how horrible was that? You got American Airlines flight coming in. I mean, clearance, got clearance for landing. I mean, they're literally about to land. I mean, no heads up, no notification, nothing. And this Blackhawk, if you look at the flight path on it, we've looked at it, it was very odd how it flew directly into the plane. This wasn't another plane. This is a helicopter.
Okay, I'm going to talk as a pilot real quick.
I want to pull this up, though, because yeah. That's creepy stuff right there.
Because I'm a pilot. You guys know that. And I'm a licensed pilot. I kind of like the way that sounds. I always wanted to be a licensed pilot. And I finished that years ago. But what was interesting about that was, you know, the other day we flew back from St. Louis. I visited a friend of mine up there. He has a big church. And he told me he'd fly me back on his private plane.
Yeah.
And, you know, on a private airport, like on a private runway.
It's always nice.
You know, I thought, okay, this is pretty nice. And so they had an air tower there, air traffic control there. And all of a sudden, you know, we pull up in his plane. He has a jet, which is really fun. You ever get to fly in a private jet? It will ruin you as far as public transport. But yeah, so we pulled to the end of the runway, and we're ready to go. And we have to sit there. Here comes a plane landing. The plane lands. And then another plane lands. We're still sitting there. It's another plane lands. about five planes landed.
Yeah.
And they were spaced about 10 miles apart.
Yeah.
So it was a minute. We sat there for a while. And I thought to myself, well, I'm glad we're sitting here burning jet fuel. This is great.
It happens.
And, you know, and I remember the same thing happened to me in my Cessna. I would be sitting at the end of the runway, and there you couldn't see anybody. And they don't tell you to go. You have to listen. You can't just run around and do things you want to do out there. You start running into each other. And you'd sit there and wait and wait and wait and wait. One time I was so frustrated. I was leaving Lakeland Airport, and one of their Amazon 737 transport planes was there. And that thing was about a half a mile down the runway from me, and they let him go in front of me. And remember, I'm in a Cessna. This dude's putting out some serious jet wash.
Yeah,
you know, and now that means this everything's all the air's all stirred up and turbulence and everything else. So I think to myself, great, I get to fly in the turbulence and get out of here. And what you do is you basically have to fly and get up off the ground before it does off the ground in the area that it was in, and then you stay away from that turbulence. But it was funny, I had to sit there and wait for this thing forever. That was fun. But here's what happens, and here's why I tell you all of that stuff, and I probably was a little bit long on that, but here's the thing. When a plane is cleared for landing, unless there's an emergency by another aircraft declared, nothing changes that. You have to sit and wait. You have no choice whatsoever. You sit and you wait until air traffic control tells you to go. When that American Airlines flight was cleared to land, at that point in time, it was landing. Now, the problem is that Black Hawk helicopter is full of glass. The whole front of that plane, it's not like the Apache where the visibility is really minuscule. That Black Hawk is glass awesome. You look at the front of the cockpit, I mean, you can see everything in it. I mean, the windows are like this big on both sides. I mean, all the way around, you can see everything around that plane. Now, there's only three officers running that aircraft. And the problem was this plane's coming in for a landing. We just got its landing lights on. And those things are bright. They're all LEDs on these new aircraft, on these new jets. So there's here comes a super bright headlight in your eyes. And you're not paying any attention, and you're only looking at your instruments, and nobody bothers to notice there's a plane about to hit you?
Yeah, they said there was full visibility, too, 10-mile visibility.
Okay, now let's walk through this scenario again. So either we have here, we had a female pilot that only had about 500 hours of flight time, which they say, you know, she had plenty of time. Let me say something to you this way. I've got a bunch of pilots that I know. They say you don't know crap until you get about 1,000 hours. They all say that. Now, she had 500 hours, and she was also working in the Biden's White House. Yeah.
Yeah.
And her whole social media profiles were scrubbed. Well, does that mean that she was basically a tranny? Does that mean she was a, you know, Butch Dyke lesbian? Does that mean she was a lesbian? Does that mean she was a DEI hire? I don't know. I'm not picking on her. She's dead. My condolences to her family, to everybody else who died on this. I'm just painting a scenario for you. Or was someone else targeted?
Or was this plane?
So let's get some scenarios here. These are speculations on my part. All of this is speculation. Were these pilots even alive on top in this in this helicopter?
No, that's what I'm going to read this right here. Put on camera four, Rich. As part of the DARPA alias program, Sikorsky's has further developed the Matrix autonomy system to perform missions with great efficiency and safety, whether with two pilots, one pilot, or zero pilots on board. The forward node in the mesh network Matrix-equipped aircraft provides mission command and fully autonomous capability of the Black Hawk helicopter.
So now let's talk for a second.
That's from Lockheed.
Now let me pull you back away from this for a second, because this is pretty negative stuff here right now. But let's go to another little negative topic. There are a bunch of state troopers who worked with Bill Clinton who saw all kinds of things behind the scenes.
Yeah.
They died at Waco,
yep.
Several of them.
ATF, too.
Mm-hmm. They knew the Clintons. Now, how in the world did they get off the Clinton detail and get into the detail waiting and ready to camp? And some people said that they were shot and killed by friendly fire.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes some people just need to go away because they know too much. Now, is that any of these pilots? I don't know. I'm just throwing scenarios out here because I don't know. The NTSB will come in and say what happened to it. It's the best of their ability. And they're coming. They're dealing with wreckage that's going to be, you know, exploded on fire,
in the water,
in the salt
sunk.
Water. You know, so I mean, so all this stuff is something we got to think about. Or was there somebody on that other plane that knew too much? That's a lot of. Don't you remember when SEAL Team 6 was killed? Remember that, Austin?
Oh yeah.
I told Sharon when they came in and they, quote, killed Osama bin Laden, I mean, I remember I looked at her and I said, they're all dead men.
Yeah.
And she goes, what do you mean? I said, that didn't happen. And I said, you know, he died a long time ago. I said, that didn't happen. I said, they can't leave these witnesses out there intact like that. Don't you remember they threw Osama bin Laden's body off the helicopter so nobody could identify or do a DNA test?
A water funeral.
Yeah. Don't you remember all that? And, you know, because they had to cover everything up. And I looked at Sharon. I said, they're all going to die now. And it was just a few months later, their helicopter blew up, you know, and they were all dead. And you think to yourself, well, Ted, did you call that? Yeah, I called it. Now, so what's going on? Is there somebody on that American Airlines jet? I don't know. Or was there somebody on the military aircraft that maybe their bodies were still in there? Maybe they were unconscious. I don't know. We don't know what happened. All I know is I never heard any radio communication from the helicopter, Austin. And I've listened to the tapes. I mean, they're warning us. Do you see the American Airlines flight? Crickets. You know, there's a little intercom here. This is your speaker on the. You got your yoke here, and you're flying the plane, and all you do is push that little button with your thumb. Yeah, affirmative. I see the American Airlines flight. That's it. You don't have to do a bunch of switches and everything else. They do it there on purpose in case it's an emergency and you have to quickly say something, and you don't have to try to find and fumble for switches. I mean, if your plane is going down in a rapid descent, you can still find that switch and call for help. It's designed to be like that to make it easy to call in for help. And how in the world did three people who are highly trained in a glass cockpit? I mean, the whole part of the cockpit is glass on a beautiful helicopter, by the way. How in the world did no one see the headlights of an oncoming jet? I mean, obviously they were close enough; they hit it. You know,
they were clear for landing. They were right about to land, so they weren't running that fast either.
They were probably running 130 knots.
Yeah.
That's usually the landing speed for a jet.
Yeah, it wasn't some higher collision, high speed.
No, and so that, and you know, and that's I find interesting. So, why did this happen? Was it targeted, or was it just a DEI hire who was an idiot who didn't know what she was doing? But if it was, why didn't somebody panic and say something in the plane on the intercom?
That's exactly right.
Or on the helicopter, in it. Why didn't say something? What happened to the other two guys? I mean, if these other two guys see something coming towards them about to hit them, why aren't they saying something to her? You know, why are we not hearing it? I don't know. The whole thing is weird to me. It all is weird. And so, you know, I have as many questions as I've got answers to this, but I know one thing. When a plane is cleared for landing, it's going to get cleared for landing unless another plane comes in and declares an emergency before it, and they have to divert the plane that's trying to land. They will do that. That's only in an emergency situation. I didn't hear any of that on the radio chatter, Austin.
Well, it even said the Army's aviation director said that both pilots had flown the specific route that resulted in the collision. Both pilots had flown it at night as well before. This wasn't something new to either one of them.
And then the thing that's crazy about it, now this is the other thing that doesn't make any sense. There are very specific altitudes that you can go in and encroach in the airspace of a major airport because they don't want planes doing exactly what just happened, running into each other. Now, why weren't these altitudes met? There's all kinds of questions here as to what happened. I read one other article said that the helicopter had actually gone up in order to intercept the airplane.
Well, there's been multiple videos that have gotten released on it that don't make any sense because you see the plane coming and you see all the lights on. It's visible from far away, and you see the helicopter way away. And the helicopter's not even run that fast either. And it just keeps going. And just flies right into it. Even on the flight plan, when you look at it, as far as they have in the digital flight plan, you can see it goes right into it and goes straight into the plane.
It's almost like it plotted an interception point. Maybe there was an AI running it, like you said.
Maybe the DARPA alias program that they've been equipped in on these. I don't know.
I mean, I haven't heard anyone else talk about this.
No, I haven't either. And that's the strange part about it. This is on Lockheed Martin's website that they've
been working. Look at the glass on the front of this helicopter.
They've been working on this program for 10 years now.
Excellent visibility. So it doesn't need any pilots to fly.
No, it says that right here.
Mm-hmm.
It can up to do zero pilots on board with great efficiency and safety.
Was it Kobe Bryant? It was Kobe Bryant who died in a helicopter crash. And I never understood that one either because, you know, I told everybody, I said, these things can hover.
Yeah. Yes. You just
so if you're Kobe Bryant's pilot who's supposed to have all this time, why didn't he just hover the helicopter instead of flying around at 180 knots to the side of a mountain? That's called control flight into terrain. You think, well, what does that mean? I mean, he was flying the plane, ran into a mountain with it. I remember that when I was taking my FFA pilot exam, he asked me about that. He says, you know, what's control? It was it's called CFIT. And I'd not heard of it before. And that's kind of odd, but I had not heard about it because it's so rare. And I told Chuck, the guy who was giving me the exam, I said, Chuck, I don't know what that is, but I can look it up for you. This is an oral final, right? And he goes, well, it's control flight in a train. I'm like, yeah, I know what that is. And he goes, that's how Kobe Bryant died. I said, I know. And he says, you've got to be aware of that when you're flying in the mountains in obfuscation, where it's real cloudy, real foggy, and the mountains put about that kind of steam and you can't see it. I know when we left North Carolina in the plane, if I couldn't see the top of the mountains from the airport, I didn't take off because I was flying VFR, visual flight rules. I couldn't plot a course, you know, using my equipment. It wouldn't do that on my plane. So I would just have to always make sure that I could see where I was going to go. And if I couldn't see the top of the mountains, I just didn't take off. Why would that be? Well, I think we go this way. It's clear. We can't see the mountaintop. It's got clouds on it. Yeah, it's got to be clear. No, it may not be clear. You may hit the mountain. So that's why you'd be so careful when you fly. But all of this stuff with this helicopter and this American Airlines flight, something's not right with any of it, Austin.
No.
It's the whole thing. The whole thing reeks.
No, it's not. And also, too, this is another story as far as going to a health story that I wanted to cover today. This is an article that just came out. And we're seeing more and more now. And the reason why I keep bringing these articles up is because we're starting to realize how engineered a lot of this food is that's on the shelf of every single grocery store. There's another study that came out now talking about ultra-processed food addiction, a little known but serious growing problem. And it's talking about the complexities of food addiction and its relationship with ultra-processed foods and essentially how treatments are starting to be made. We're like natural doctors are starting to look at different treatments to get people essentially off these food products because they're so hooked on them, as bad as some drugs in certain cases. And they said studies are suggesting how the ultra-processed foods, which have been engineered to be tasty, are also being engineered to be incredibly addictive. And I've talked about this so many times on here, but I want to reiterate it again. It says the NOVA food classification system used in research considers sugar-sweetened drinks, packaged snacks, prepaid frozen dishes, canned and instant soups, ice cream, chicken nuggets, and reconstituted meat products to be ultra-processed foods. And essentially we're having what they call as unrecognized disorders, where certain things are being diagnosed as a problem, but in reality it's stemming down to severe food addiction. They said it's food addiction has now been closely intertwined with industrialized ultra-processed foods, bread, cereals, snacks, sugary drinks, fast foods, and so forth. And they said they trigger the bliss point, a dopamine response that fuels cravings for more. Research shows that people react to these ingredients like the fat, the sugar, the sweeteners, the additives, and starch in a way similar to illicit drugs, like consuming higher and higher doses and experiencing rapid absorption. And this is where it talks about here with the bliss point. It's why people get some so addicted. They said food now is essentially a drug in some cases. They said ultra-processed food is wildly different from real food that should be considered a chemical substance, especially for children. The American Psychological Association said they looked here and found that 12% of children and 14% of adults are now showing signs of severe food addiction. Now, listen, my friends, this isn't by accident. This is by a very, very serious combination of what I just talked about earlier. So be aware of this stuff. If you are going to eat junk food occasionally, make sure it's on a rare basis. Don't continually eat it. It talks about here the 25-question Yale Food Addiction Scale, which determines if someone is struggling, and it goes over here, taking more of a substance than intended, wanting or unsuccessfully attempting to quit the substance, spending excessive time and effort to quit the substance, neglecting obligations, and it goes in here now talking about how so many people are actually becoming addicted to these foods on a regular basis, and it's becoming more and more of a problem. And so again, something to look at here. It's something to read, but I want you guys to read this article if you are struggling with that or you have family is, because everybody's done it before. You'll eat something and it's a high calorie meal, but suddenly you're still hungry. You're craving more food afterwards. You're like, dude, that was 400, 500, 600, 700 calories. Why am I hungry? This is why when you eat stuff like organic chicken and rice and broccoli and vegetables, you can get a whole plate of it. You're full for a while. You don't want any more. That's why it's so easy to overeat a lot of these high-calorie foods. So, again, something I want to address on here, and I'll post it on the website, it says that the backbone of food addiction eating plans is abstaining from eating sugar and flour as well as food-causing individual sensitivities and making sure those foods are void of a lot of those really, really addictive compounds in there. So I just wanted to cover that today as well, and I'll post that so you guys can read it. What do you think?
I think you're right that these foods are incredibly bad and unbelievably toxic and incredibly addictive, and that's why they put the addictive quantities and quote stuff into them.
Well, they put them in ratios.
That's right.
That's what they're talking about. They said they have specific amounts of processed salt, high fructose corn syrup, and basically omega-6 fats. And apparently what there is now, there's this combination where they can combine a certain ratio on top of adding stuff like MSG, and it creates this unbelievably aggressive dopamine bliss point that just causes you to want eating more and more and more and more and more. That's why everybody's done for you. You're at a birthday party or thing, and you need some ice cream. And all of a sudden, you find 10 minutes later, you want to eat more ice cream again. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I don't really want more ice cream, but I'm craving more ice cream. It's because of that specific ratio and a lot of the foods.
Now, you don't really believe, Austin, that a food manufacturer would put a research team together to find a specific concentration of certain nutrients and chemicals to try to make the people eat more of that food, do you?
Oh, no, they would never do that, would they? they would never do that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to me. It's, you know, and I was just going through some of my notes from last week, and one of the people that commented on it said, this is all very strange. How did the helicopter not see an airliner? And why was the transponder turned off?
That was one thing I heard, too. They said they weren't responding.
Well, transponders on the airplane, and that shows the other airplanes where that plane is. In other words, without the transponder turned on, the plane, you can't see it. It won't pop up.
Almost like Lockheed Martin's Matrix system. Because remember, this autonomous program, this DARPA alias program, it controls every function of the plane when it's implemented. Meaning if it wants to turn the transponder off, if it wants to turn the radio off, if it wants to control everything on it, it can do this.
Well, it makes the plane go invisible or the helicopter go invisible. It says approaching a busy airport should demand maximum alertness and situational awareness. Sounds outlandish, but could this have been a stolen helicopter with an intentional crash? They're asking that. Where people are asking the same questions we're asking now. You know, if it was a stolen helicopter with a crash, were there really these pilots on board? I mean, this is some weird stuff, guys. When you start looking at what's happened here, it's a strange environment to be in as far as that we're even talking about stuff like this. But, you know, it's been a weird week now because, you know, there are a lot of people are basically trying to figure out, you know, what happened with this airplane. I'm telling you, when you get into a heavy area like this of flying, you've got to be so careful. I mean, how in the world did three pilots on a helicopter not see an oncoming airplane with headlights turned on? I don't know, Austin. What's your next story?
Well, that's and another thing. You had that dog. You had the flight in Philadelphia, the medevac pediatric, you know, patient crash in a neighborhood. I mean, then that was that pilot air. I don't know. They're doing more research on that. And I give my condolences to the family and the kids on that because the medical ambulance plane was transporting a young girl who just received life-saving treatment. And it crashed. And but these planes, I mean, they can be dangerous. I mean, you're flying up in the air. I mean, it's,
well, I know my flight, my FAA examiner, he says, this is dangerous as blankety blank. He said, be careful when you're up there, especially in the mountains. And I'm like, I will be.
Yeah.
And he's right. It's very, when you fly an airplane, everybody wants to fly an airplane. Well, not everybody. Most people, a lot of people want to fly airplanes. They want to learn how to be a pilot.
Or fly in an airplane.
Or fly in an airplane. But when you're in the front, it's not relaxing.
It's not relaxing at all.
Austin's been in the front with me many times.
I remember the first couple of times I ran right seat up there. I was so just, I'm like, okay, I'm doing this with him. And it's not enjoyable. It wasn't for me at first. I got used to it after a while, but the beginning phase, I'm like, man, we could really kill ourselves right now. We're not paying attention. No, I'm serious. Look at it. There's nobody up there to save you. It's you. That's it. If you don't do it right, it's over with.
It's the weirdest thing. The first time you solo.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, you're sitting there. Your instructor gets out.
Have fun.
And you taxi into the runway, looking around. You're on the radio, about to take off. And you're going down the runway, and all of a sudden the wheels come up. Now you're in the air, and you're like,
well, that's it. I'm committed now.
I'm in it now. I mean, I hope I can land it now. And it's a very strange feeling.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden you're like, well, you know, I guess we'll see how this works, and but it's also exhilarating. Because now all of a sudden your life is in your hands. But at least you don't have, you know, five more passengers on board.
Yeah, that's the other thing. As far as you've got passengers on board, it's a whole other level.
And that's why when you're doing your solo training, you know, after you basically, you know, solo and you're flying and doing your cross country, they don't let you take anybody else on board with you.
Yeah. It's on you, bro.
By the way, this is an interesting article by John Whitehead. It said, "The Rise of the Immortal Dictator." Talking about AI. What will AI mean for freedom and government? Now, think about it for a second. If Elon Musk is working with AI, it would be the best and behooving to Elon Musk to eliminate obstacles for AI,
yeah,
including shutting down certain agencies. Okay? I just thought about that for a second. If one company or small group of people manages to develop a godlike digital intelligence, could they take over the world? At least when there's an evil dictator, that humans could eventually die. But for an AI, there'd be no death. It would live on forever. And then you'd have an immortal dictator from which we could never escape.
This is integrated into everything in our lives.
And this is a quote from Elon Musk from 2018. Okay, so all of a sudden now he's pushing the AI. Because the deep state's about to go turbocharged, while the news media fixates to the extent on which Project 2025 may be Trump's administration's playbook for locking down the nation, there was a more subversive power play taking place undercover of Trump's unique brand of circus politics. It's not my circus, not my hippopotamus. Take a closer look at what's unfolding, and you'll see that the appearance to the contrary. Trump isn't planning to do away with the deep state. Rather, he was hired by the deep state to usher in the golden age of AI. This is John Whitehead. He's a brilliant man. I like this guy. Get ready for surveillance state 2.0. To achieve the turbocharged surveillance state, the government is turning to its most powerful weapon yet, AI. With its ability to learn, adapt, and operate at speeds unimaginable to humans, it is poised to become the engine of the new world order. Over the course of 70 years, the technology has developed so rapidly that it has gone from early computers exhibiting primitive forms of artificial intelligence to machine learning AI systems that learn from historic data to deep learning, machine capable that mimics the human brain, to generative AI, which can create original content and appears able to think for itself. When we are approaching the point of no return, in tech speak, this point of no return is aptly termed singularity, the point at which AI eclipses its human handlers and becomes all-powerful. Elon Musk has predicted that singularity could happen by 2026. Wow, Austin. That's next year, bud.
I know.
2026. While the scientific community has a lot to say about the world-altering impact of artificial intelligence on every aspect of our lives, little has been said about this growing role in government and its oppressive effect on our freedoms, especially the core democratic principles of privacy, autonomy, equality, and the political process and the rule of law. According to a report from Accenture, it is estimated across both the public and private sectors, generative AI has potential to automate a significant portion of jobs across various sectors. Is that why AI is helping Elon Musk to shut down multiple agencies now?
There's an argument to that too, though, because you also have to look at some of these positions and agencies' actual useful purpose and what they're doing.
They don't have one.
They don't have one, right? So, you can spin that and say, oh yeah, well, Elon Musk is doing this because of that. I already know the dangers and risk of AI. I've talked about it and covered more in a second here. I don't agree with a lot of it, and it's happening whether or not we want it to or not. Whether or not Trump promotes it or pushes it, it's coming. AI is here. The amount of money that's
Trump's already said he's throwing $500 million.
Yeah, we'll see how Congress
half trillion,
$500 billion. We'll see how that actually comes along. But the thing about this is at what point were we just going to continue to allow these agencies to rampantly burn through money and hire people that we didn't even need?
Maybe that's what AI. Maybe that's what Elon Musk is doing. He's getting rid of agencies to get funding for the AI.
Possibly.
Now think about that for a second.
Yeah.
Elon Musk said last week, we don't have the money for the $500 billion. And suddenly,
that's true. He starts dissolving a couple dozen agencies.
Yeah, he's that one company that one was already dealing with
$72 billion
right there. Boom. Yeah. Now that money's freed up.
It's a possibility. I mean, the issue that AI that comes into it now, and it talks about it right here, it says as AI grows more sophisticated and widespread, the dangers of artificial intelligence are growing louder and louder. Because here's the problem. You have to look at cost-benefit analysis. You got to look at a T-chart with anything you're putting in this kind of money. What are the benefits of AI? Okay, there's faster algorithm analyzing. There's ability to write papers and do things, but it's way beyond that. There's levels of AI that are talking about now. They said automation spurred job loss is a downfall. Deep fakes, we've already seen that. Privacy violations. algorithmic bias caused by bad data, socioeconomic inequality, market volatility, weapons autonomization. That's a big one. Kind of like weaponizing a Black Hawk that nobody's able to control and it's able to operate on its own with the Matrix DARPA technology. Also talked about here, uncontrollable, self-aware AI.
And by the
that's
way,
a big one.
By the way, that DARPA technology on that Black Hawk, this is not theory. This is available today.
No, I would post a link on it. This is – remember, you got to remember, if Lockheed Martin puts an article out last year talking about this technology being implemented in Blackhawks, it's already been around and tested for quite a while. Weapons manufacturers and basically weapons contractors don't release stuff until they already have it fully dialed in.
We're talking Cyberdyne.
Yeah. So you're talking about autonomous Blackhawk helicopters to be able to be controlled with AI tied into them.
I wonder if they put miniguns on them if they're autonomous. And then
that's right here. Weapons autonomization. That's a serious problem.
Right, there it is.
If nobody's seen Cyberdyne in the first Terminator, I mean, there's a reason. You know what's wild about this, right? So, you know, the first and second Terminator, I'm not recommending those as like research movies, but I'm saying that idea of that technology was out in the 80s. That was before we even had any aspects of supercomputers.
40 years ago.
Yeah. Right. Supercomputers weren't even in existence. The internet itself wasn't really even available. But yet you had the making of these movies that talks about artificial intelligence.
Becoming self-aware, yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, again, something to be aware of on it. But back to Elon Musk, you know, that's a theory. You know, could he be shutting down these agencies to basically free up more cash? I don't know. But I know one thing we're going to find out real quick as far as when the budget spending bill comes out next year or this year.
Well, I just hope they clean that mess up. I mean, I get rid of all this pork barrel bottle check. This is such a nightmare is what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I've got good news.
Let's hear it.
White House open press access to podcasters and influencers.
Oh, wow. That'd be interesting.
That'd be us.
That'd be interesting.
Me and you in the White House.
You can get a press pass?
Oh, yeah. I'll try. I may need you guys to go ahead and send letters or emails and say, let the browers in.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's worth a shot. You
I would not have to go. I wouldn't say much the first time I went in there. I just kind of like.
Oh, I'd analyze it for a while. Yeah. Kind of start reading the room.
Yeah, before they say time for you to leave.
Yeah. you don't get kicked out the first day. That's never a good look.
Well, that'd be the first 10 seconds. But they said something. Get them out.
Get them out.
We already know the city commission decided to have the police stand behind us.
Oh, yeah.
It was terrible. all we're doing is protesting a mini warehouse next door or subdivision. White House open press access to podcasters and influencers. Public trust in legacy media is declining. That's a fact. According to the presidential press secretary, Caroline Leavitt, the administration of U.S. President Donald Trump has invited members of the new media take a prominent place in the White House press briefing room, citing dwindling public interest in traditional outlets. Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt announced the new policy in her opening remarks at press briefing on Tuesday. The Trump White House will speak to all media outlets and personalities, not just the legacy media who are seated in this room, Leavitt said. She extended an invitation to independent journalists, podcasters, social media influencers, and content creators to apply for credentials. I think I'm going to do this.
Do it. Let's do it.
Wouldn't you like to go to D.C. and just kind of chill out?
I would not like to go to D.C. I loathe going to D.C., but I would like to go to D.C. if I got a press pass.
Leavitt stated that those vetted by their office and the Secret Service would be welcome in the James S. Brady briefing room in the West Wing. In a symbolic gesture, a seat previously reserved for one of the press secretary staff members will now be called the new media seat. Oh, we get one seat?
One seat.
Oh, yeah. How many podcasts can apply for the one seat and give it a new media journalist? She said the policy change addresses a situation which millions are listening now to podcasts. According to the pollster Gallup, trust in the news outlets has been a steady decline. Trump's relationship with the mainstream media has been contentious, and the animosity intensified during his first term in office from 2017 to 2021 due to Russiagate. Currently, left-leaning legacy news media faces significant challenges with major news outlets like MSNBC, CNN, and Washington Post grappling with audience losses and revenue declines, prompting reorganizations and layoffs to cut costs. Well, when all you do is spew lies, like CNN, that's a communist news network. That's all it is.
All they do is lie. All they do is lie and manipulate.
Constant news, constant lies, constant everything in that network. They start to realize that nobody wants to listen to it anymore. But you know what's amazing to me? There's still that certain group of people that believe this garbage.
Well, they're addicted to the lie. That's what it is. their normalcy bias is so strong. They're addicted to having the constant lie.
You know, Scott Fitzgerald, he said it this way when he wrote The Great Gatsby. He said that a true genius has the ability to look at both sides of the argument and argue both directions.
Yeah.
You know, well, I understand why Joe feels this way, but I understand why Debbie feels this way. I can argue for Debbie and I can argue for Joe, and somewhere in the middle is going to be the truth.
Well, that's why a lot of times good attorneys, they've gone on both sides as far as defense and basically prosecution.
Well, they'll agree with 90% of the testimony against their client, and so with the other 10%. And so what that does, it creates an appearance of a lack of bias.
Yeah.
And so that's true. If a person is going to be, I don't like Donald Trump no matter what. Donald Trump says some good things. People say, I don't like Joe Biden no matter what. I really don't like Joe Biden.
Where are you going with that one?
Yeah.
That was the best analogy.
Oh, why did I bring him up?
I don't know why you brought him up on that. I was waiting for you. I was like, well, he doesn't bring Biden up.
I don't like Hillary Clinton no matter what. True, too. I don't know what to say.
Richard Benghazi.
Oh, yeah. But there's some people out there that are so evil to the core, and their values are so skewed that
you can't argue for them.
There's no redeemable value in them.
No, there's not.
God, you imagine. Look, and Kamala Harris. She did have a nice smile, though. But when you look at her now, she kind of looks back. And now 60 Minutes is having to release all the tapes.
Oh, all the cut and edited videos they did her for the election.
Yeah, because Trump's got a big lawsuit.
Oh, they got a huge trouble for that. They're going we got this live footage of Kamala Harris to come back. Like, no, they've scrubbed like 30 minutes of the interview. They cut it.
Well, they were cutting and deleting, which is what they. You know what's so funny about all that?
That's been
they have been doing that. They've been doing that for decades.
Yeah.
They can make you say anything. You'll say, well, I think they should all be hung. Talking about pedophiles. Well, then you say, well, they ask you the question then. They cut it in. They go, what about all these Christians?
Yeah.
I think they should all be hung. You didn't say that about the Christians.
It's so easy to edit stuff like that.
So, digital editing has been around for a long time. And that's why I stopped doing tapes on shows, because they can make you say anything. It's horrible. Make you sound like you're like Looney Tunes or something.
That's exactly what they do.
All right, what's your next story?
This is an article that I was interesting on as far as it's not interesting. It's kind of sad, but something to be aware of. And it says the rise in aggression and hallucinations among teens tied to cell phone use and social media. Mm. They said the trend is particularly pronounced in females. They're saying 65% of whom were studied are distressed or struggling in a manner that substantially impairs their ability to function effectively in the world and rises to the level of clinical concern. And it talks about here now how they studied data from 10,475 adolescents 13 to 17 in the U.S. and India, with roughly 5,000 teens from each country, and they talked about the mental disorders that are starting to rise. They said mind health and well-being are poor with each generation. And, you know, it's interesting because I talked to a friend of mine the other day. I took the kids to Monster Jam. He's younger than me, and he's very awake and alert in a lot of stuff. And he said the issue that we've seen now, Austin, and I've said the same things. I taught him a lot, and I've had a lot of buddies that have worked with him as far as in business. And, you know, back, 20, 30 years ago, and I remember this growing up, you kind of had your group of individuals as kids that you knew, friends at school, friends in the neighborhood, friends at karate or jiu-jitsu or football or whatever you did. And you kind of had that group of individuals that you're around. Whether it was a big city, small town, whatever it was a limited hub. And in reality, in the scope of the world, it was very limited. Maybe the town's got 50,000 people, maybe it's got 5,000, maybe it's got 100,000. But in reality, it's still a very limited scope. And what happens is now is you kind of had who you were available to hang out with, who you could see, who you could date, who you could talk to, who your friends were. It was all limited. Now you've got this aspect where, you back then you compared yourself to friends groups or they're doing this or they're doing that or they're dating who. Now you don't compare it to 50,000 in a town or 100,000 in a big town or 5,000 in a small town. Now you compare it to 7 billion other people, right? Now you've got social media platforms that show every echelon of people all across the globe, with people showing only the best of the best of the best that they have or do on social media. And you have these young kids now that are single-digit and teenagers that are being exposed to this stuff. They're going, well, I don't know, this one girl over in Europe, her daddy bought her a Bugatti for her 18th birthday. Why don't I have a Bugatti? I'm just bizarre things.
I would love one too.
But so what's happened is now they're saying that these generations now, each generation that's having earlier and earlier exposure to social media and the internet is getting worse and worse and worse from a mental standpoint. And they said teens now are reporting a sense of detachment from reality and hallucinations. They said over half the teens in the age group said the feeling of sadness, guilt, and anxiety caused them to have serious problems in their everyday life, experiencing debilitating, unwanted, strange thoughts. This, again, is because there's so much being inputted into their brain that is not natural. When you take a kid back in the 90s, and you know you have doing school or you're watching TV, everything, you had to actually have a mildly decent attention span. No more. Now with the inception of TikTok, kids will watch 400 to 500 reels a day.
I know, but it's hard to believe they should. What happens is you get nothing else to do.
No, when you get these kids' brains, though, they're 12, 13 years old. Their brains are not wired to handle that level of sensory input all day long. It's not normal. You're not designed to have 5 and 10 second snippets being watched 500, 600 different times of different platforms. And it said now 37% of these teens, 13 to 17, reported suicidal thoughts. They said 13-year-olds reported markedly increased feelings of aggression towards others, hallucinization, anger, and irritability compared with the 17-year-olds. They said decline in the mental health is being linked to early cell phone usage. They said the rapid increased problems of aggression, anger, and irritability, particularly in females, is large and attributed to the increasing young age of which children now getting smartphones. They said, although with more children getting the first smartphone at a younger age, these predicting an increasingly violent future and unstable children in society. They said staring at a cell phone exposes children and adolescents to content that's inappropriate for most kids, just to be in general, and pulls them away from engaging directly with their family, friends, and broader community. And they start living in this digital world, and numerous hours they could be spent sleeping that are now online, which is causing more issues with basically psychosis. Because they're not getting 8, 9, 10 hours of sleep a night. They're getting 4 or 5 because they're spent staring at a screen. And it's becoming a very serious problem. So, again, something I wanted to address on this, because I've seen it so much now, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. Be very aware of what your children are being exposed to if they do have these things, and make sure you're trying to limit screen time the best you possibly can.
That's well, you know, I saw this when I was a kid. Because, you know, my mom worked all the time. She had the German beer tavern.
Yeah.
And I'd watch TV.
Yeah.
And of course, I was watching Johnny Weissmuller and Tarzan.
Yeah, on a 24-inch TV, black and white.
But you know, it was funny because you know you start mimicking things. Johnny Weissmuller had built a deadfall. You know, he had dug a hole
right.
and had caught animals in it, and then he basically would take this deep hole and he'd put moss across the top of it, and the animal would fall into it.
Right.
I thought that was so cool. So I decided I was going to go catch me a drunk one night.
From the cottages.
Yeah, this is true story. This horrible story. Little, I'm like 7, 8 years old. So I go behind my mom's bar.
Start you know, shoveling.
No, I'm digging a hole. And I'm like, I'm almost over my head in the hole. Okay?
So you didn't water yet.
I mean, you're seeing dirt coming up out of the hole. And it's, you know, this little 7-year-old's in the bottom of this hole digging this hole. And so I'm out there now. I got twigs across the top of it. And I'm laying moss on it.
Oh my gosh.
This thing's 4 feet deep.
Broken ankle waiting to happen, dude.
Broken ankle, broken neck. And so finally, I got me a deadfall for a drunk. I'm catching me a drunk. And all of a sudden, one of our customers walks in and goes, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Me? I'm just digging a hole.
I'm just hanging out."
He goes, "It looks like a deadfall." And I'm like, "Oh, no.
I would never do that."
And boy, my mom comes around the back. She comes walking outside. Oh, my gosh, is she mad.
That's why exposure right there. So it drives into it.
She's filling that hole before she falls in it. And I thought, oh, but that's what I wanted to see. I'm supposed to see me a drunk fall into a hole. But so kids, when they watch TikTok and they watch stuff, even watch Johnny Weissmuller, you know, you got to watch what they're going to do next.
Yeah.
They all of a sudden they're thinking they're Batman running across the top of the roof.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you see him take a flying leap. You better be there to catch him.
And remember, this goes the same way. With a lot of this crap that's on social media and in shows now and YouTube and Disney where they're showing this perversion now with this transgender
exactly
crap and everything.
Right.
You wonder why this transgender ideology is exploding on this younger generation right now. Look no further than what they're being exposed to. That's funny about them. You know what's funny is I remember the same ideas popping up in my head after watching the Swiss Family Robinson.
Oh, yeah.
Where it says the deadfall, the tiger in it. Caught me a tiger. I caught me a tiger. Like, I want a tiger.
But no, it was funny, and I just.
But no, it's a serious issue, and again, you know, that's a show back in the day, or you know, Swiss Family Robinson.
I dug the deadfall, yeah. Austin. It was there. I was completely unsupervised. It was awful. I'm running around the shovel, you know, just digging around, thinking this is great.
This is great.
And I learned also that you don't take a water hose and put it down in the ground. And see how deep it'll go because you can't pull it back
sometimes,
out.
Well, we reached the point.
Once it goes about 12 feet, it ain't coming back.
I remember I used to help you. We'd try to get the air pockets. We were getting all those oak trees in
when
I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
And you're doing that, basically trying to get air pockets out. I remember I did the same thing. I was like, well, I'm just going to see how far I can push this in the ground later on. You get it down there, you're like, hose will come out. Oh, no, I'm in trouble again.
But no, but kids are supposed to, are designed to basically learn.
But see, the difference with that, though, is, I mean, not that I'm recommending digging deadfalls at 7 or 8 years old, but, you know, you're active trying to experiment with something outside and being engaged in something. This now, the problem is social media. There's no attempt to them to replicate anything that's actually realistic. It's all just a bunch of weird stuff in their head causing hallucinations.
I was like 7 or 8 years old, and I watched a guy build a screen one time for one of the cottages,
yeah,
for the window. And I told my mom I could do that.
Yeah.
And she goes, okay, whatever. So I built one.
Yeah.
And it was perfect. I had a miter box out. I had the whole thing. Built the whole thing. And I said, so I brought it up to her. I said, here's the screen. How'd you do that? I said, I watched somebody else do it. I built it.
Yeah.
And she said, well, can you build them for all the windows? And I started building screens.
Yeah.
I was like 7, 8 years old.
There you go.
And the problem is when you start doing that, suddenly becomes your job.
Yeah, your unpaid job description. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. No,
she had all these skeleton keys that we had no way to get the locks unlocked because they were all painted shut. Because these cottages were built like, you know, 50, 60 years earlier. And they were old. And so I went out there. So I disassembled the skeleton key assembly one time. I said, oh, that's easy. That's very simple. I can fix this. So I started fixing all the locks. That's finally, funny. I said, okay, I just need the keys now. I'll tell you which ones open which cottages now. You can use them again. Because she had to put a padlock on them.
Yeah.
And I said, well, that looks tacky. We can get rid of the padlocks now.
That's so funny.
So I'm this little kid doing all this crazy stuff. And then one time I remember Harrison said to me, you know, I was fixing something in the house. He goes, is there anything you can't fix? And I don't. I said, well, I was a victim of Brewer's Cottages. I'm still dealing with the PTSD of that. And I said, I can fix pretty much anything. And it's funny how you learn that stuff when you're little.
Well, the mind is, at a young age is so adaptive. It can really learn so much. And that's why it's so sad now when you start seeing this fodder that's in the school system now. There's no useful purpose to a lot of the public school systems now they give these kids. It's all this DEI. It's all, you know, the common core in this critical race theory. It's all just more communist propaganda. So be careful. Make sure you're protecting your kids on this stuff. And make sure you're keeping everybody safe and healthy right now, stocked up on vitamin C and D3. A lot of people are down in Florida right now are getting super
really sick.
Like I said, we took a couple of days off just to rest last week.
I was super sick. I didn't feel good.
The thing about it was, like, I just talked to another friend of mine over the weekend, and a bunch of their kids in the school, everybody's got sick. Now they're saying that some of the kids were tested for flu and COVID at the same time, which is very odd. I don't know if they get PCR tests. I don't really trust them whatsoever.
Well, you got to thank Dr. Fauci and the, you know, all the.
Hence why he got a pardon all the way back to 2014, ironically enough on that. So, again, you know, something to be aware of. If you guys need anything, Team Health Masters, email us, call us. We have the multiple kits on sale right now, including the product of the week, the joint rebuilding formula. I saw earlier I had this back on the kit as well, the stress management. That's the vitamin C with the adrenal support and the cortisol buster. That really helps out with the high-stress lifestyle if you're dealing with a lot of stuff as far as with stress management. Very, very natural supplementation that provides good results without having the use of, you know, pharmaceutical drugs, which, I mean, some cases I guess you need those, but – not something I recommend.
And keep your kids in church. That's the one thing my mom always did. Every Sunday, she even if she didn't go with us, she'd take us to church. Excuse me. And what it did is when I was old, I came back to the church and I came back to God and came back to Christ. This is really important to keep your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus, keep your children in church, and you pray with them and take care of them all the days of their life, because if you train them up on the way they should go, when they're older, they will come back to it. They'll come back to what they know the right things to do.
Absolutely, my friends. You guys need anything? We appreciate the support. You know where to get a hold of us. And give me your thoughts on this whole thing with Lockheed Martin. I'm very curious to see if you guys got any insight. I got some weapons contractors I've talked to that have given me the same information. They said it's very real. If you got any more intel on it, email it to me. I'm always curious about this kind of stuff. Have a blessed, safe, awesome night. And I'll talk to you guys again on this show tomorrow as always.
Love you guys. Got to pray for you as always. You guys are amazing. Thank you.